Welcome. I'm Zach. This is Faith Connection Bible Study. We are a church in Wilton Center, Illinois, and this is our members' session, a time where I can teach what we're learning together during our Bible study time. We believe in the local church, and that means this is not meant to replace our time together or be for broad consumption or profit. If you're in our area, I highly recommend you attend because there is so much more that is being said and being done during our time. Gee, sometimes we don't even get to some of the places we want to because we're just having such a good time and such good conversation. So we invite you to join us and be together with us at Faith Connection. You can find that information of when we gather and meet at faithconnectionwc.com. And with that, let's get into it. Trees part three. Yes. As always, our goals, we have two general goals, which should be in all Bible studies, I think, and then one that is specific to this one. So our first goal is to have a deeper connection with our faith. The Word of God should draw us closer into our relationship, into our love, into our trust of Jesus. Two, we should be gaining new tools to use as we gather together. So whether you're at home doing a devotional, whether you're reading your Bible on your own, whether you hear a biblical story or something like that in preaching or in gathered space with other Christians, I want to give you tools to be able to not have to go to a Bible resource such as like a study Bible or a commentary, something that you could just hear and say, well, there's some theme that I'm picking up here because of this, or there's something deeper here because I heard these key words. And I believe that's part of our discipleship as Christians, that just like in the time of Jesus and the apostles, that we're training our community not just to read the words, but also to hear the story. Finally, what's specific to this Bible study is to see how trees show us, as symbols, who we are, who we're meant to be, and how we connect with God. So here's our recap, right? Because that's important to get us in the mind space. Trees, as a word, can also be wood and stick and branch. And sometimes they use a specific type of tree, and that can still trigger us to understand that this theme of trees is being tugged on, right? Think of it as a web of a web that the theme is, and the scripture may have many threads, which are the themes, but when you start pulling on one, you see how it changes the full web. You can see how it starts drawing things together, and that's one of those words, trees, begins to draw from that web of the theme. So, patterns. The pattern right now, we see trees on high places, and God being present, decisions happening. And we've traced this through three main people, or I should say four, but three main stories. The Adam and Eve story, the Noah story, and the Abraham story. So in the Adam and Eve story, the pattern's kind of set with a tree, a high place, God being present, and a decision being made. And Noah adds to that, we see, by also having the tree being a way, a vehicle of salvation. The tree becomes the means in which you are now rescued. And they also kind of add sacrifice to this, because afterwards, there is a meal had, that's what a sacrifice is, with Noah on a mountain, and he uses pieces of the tree boat he just got rescued on to offer up this going up meal, sacrifice, a burnt offering before God to thank God in recognition of the salvation. Then we have Abraham, who has the same scenarios where he's found on high places with trees, with God being present and decisions being made. And the two big stories that we drew from there were where he's with God, where the three visitors come and it is revealed to be God, and God tells him, hey, Sodom and Gomorrah, it's crying out to me. Something needs to be done. And so he intercedes. So the person on the high place who's making a decision, the decision should be to intercede, to be in dialogue and relationship with God, and be with God and say, this is who you are. The other aspect to that is we see that the tree brings life, but the tree is now, access to that tree is going to be through sacrifice. There has to be something given up in order for this to be done. So we saw that with the sacrifice story of Isaac. So we kind of emphasize the part that doesn't get emphasized a lot in Christian teaching, which is, yes, Abraham is considered righteous because he listens to the voice of God, and that is important for what we're doing today. But he also fails in the sense that he's willing to give up and put in jeopardy yet again God's plan for blessing the nations and the rest of the world and setting things right, because he's willing to again throw away his son. And it is here that we realize, yes, there is sacrifice in which you will have to listen to God's voice, and that may not always be what you want to do, and you will have to give something, but in that giving, you will receive the tree of life. So it is a layered story, and so we're going to pull from one of those layers today, because today we are talking about Moses. And Moses' background, he's set up as 100% a new Noah. This is the one other place that we really hear ark used in the same word since the Noah story. And he is not just placed in a basket, Noah, when he's a baby, but he is placed in an ark. It's the same word and used with the same pitch. Pitch is in there, which is what the ark was filled and made with, and he's placed there, and he is then put into the waters, and that is what rescues him, unlike all the other children, and where he finds rescue. And because he is rescued, he then becomes part of the rescue plan of God. Now, we know originally he kind of, the story is a little repeat, and there's other things part of the story that I think we could rabbit hole down, and I don't want to do that. I really want to stay focused because there's so much goodness here. But the thing we need to know is eventually he leaves Egypt. He goes to a place where he marries somebody. He becomes a shepherd. He becomes part of another group. And while he is shepherding, he is on the mountain. It is called Horeb, the mountain of God. And this will be the same mountain, spoiler, that will be called Sinai. So Horeb and Mount Sinai are the same place. And there Moses sees a burning bush on top of the mountain, a burning tree. Now the word used here is Sinai tree, which I think eventually lends itself, it's similar language in the original Hebrew to Sinai, so we should see Sinai as linked together there. And we see him on a high place with a tree and the presence of God, which is noticed for us, highlighted for us by the burningness, the fire, the flame, the glory that is coming out of that. That is another theme that we can look at, how the presence of God is often symbolized by fire, by flame that does not consume. Another reason to connect this back to church, why we have candles in church, why we light candles in church, because it draws us to the memory, the symbol that God is with us. Why? Because when God appears, there's fire, there's brightness, there's light. So we have this moment. He recognizes that the bush isn't being burned up. He thinks that's really out of place and weird. So he goes to investigate, and we hear Moses, Moses, Moshe, Moshe. And he says, "Here I am. Take off your sandals. You're on holy ground." And we find ourselves, as he does, in this night, like Eden-like place, right? We're on the high place. There's a tree there, and lo and behold, God is there too. And so in fear, he's like, "Oh my goodness, I'm going to take off my shoes. What is going to happen?" And the scenario that plays out is that he is going to call Moses to go and rescue his people. He is also going to be a rescuer. In the way that he was rescued out of the waters, so the people will be rescued out of Egypt through the waters. And so, of course, we find a decision being made there. We could dive into that too, right? God says, "I'm going to send you." And he goes, "Do you really want to send me? I don't know. I don't really speak real well. Do you have the right guy?" Moses really doesn't want to be the guy. And eventually, sharing the responsibility with his brother, he says yes. And he has signs. And God even tells him, "You will be like God to Pharaoh and Aaron, your prophet. You will tell Aaron what to say, and he will speak it to Pharaoh in the same way that a prophet is told by God to go and speak on his behalf." So there's this connection there that I find is beautiful and wonderful and draws on the image of God theme. And so we have this renewing. It's almost like he's a new Adam, a new Noah, and he's up on the mountain. We're going to see some more stuff happening where it can link him to Abraham as well. And we see that through this moment, God says, the sign that this is, I have chosen you, that this is going to work, that this is all going somewhere, is that, and like the people will know, will have confirmation, you are sent by me, because you will return to this mountain and they will have the experience you're currently having, Moses, with me. And that'll confirm, that'll be the sign. And so we know the story. Moses returns. He comes with Aaron and Miriam, and they become leaders in the community, the 10 plagues, and we come out of that. And then we have the parting of the Red Sea, the Spirit of God showing up, separating the tree or the sea, and them walking on dry ground. And lo and behold, just like there was a way through the water for Moses, there's a way through the waters for the people, and they sing and they dance. And then we stop and we get this weird little story in Exodus 15, immediately after they have gone from the Red Sea. It says, "Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the desert of Shur. For 3 days they traveled in the desert without finding water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink its water because it was bitter. That is why the place is called Marah, because it means bitter. So the people grumbled against Moses, saying, 'What are we to drink?' Then Moses cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a piece of wood, a tree. He threw it into the water, and the water became fit to drink. Then the Lord issued a ruling and instruction for them and put them to the test. He said, 'If you listen carefully to the Lord your God and do what is right in his eyes, if you pay attention to his commands and keep all his decrees, I will not bring on you any of the diseases I brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you.' Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs and 70 palm trees, and they camped there near the water." Now, this story is interesting for many, many reasons. One, we see that there is the intercession again. He's becoming like an Abraham. He is interceding for the people. We see a decision. We see a tree, although it's not on a high place. But that's pretty interesting. We have this moment where we see how the tree brings life, brings healing to the waters. We see that there is a test, which I think they passed, to be honest, because it says from there, right? Even though the whole people didn't pass, Moses passed by the intercession. And because of that, they now get into this little Eden-like space they find there in the wilderness. And I say that because there's trees for shade for every tribe and for all the families of the tribe, and there's a spring of water for every tribe. So there's water and plenty and trees there for all to experience this goodness of God. And what I want to highlight here is the test was, if you listen to my voice, I'm told in the Hebrew that the phrase is, if you listen, they double down. It's please pay attention to this. It's highlight this. Listen to my voice, which harkens us back to, of course, Adam and Eve and Noah and Abraham and even Sarah. Would you listen to my voice? If you listen to me, there will be good things that happen. And just as I mentioned on Sunday, as a tease for today, that's going to be important, that the people listen. And this happens long before they get to Sinai, long before they become the people with the Ten Commandments and in a covenant relationship with God. And that God says, if you listen to me, you will not experience what the Egyptians experienced. You will know me, right? You will know me as the God who heals you, like the God who heals this water, not as the God who offers the illnesses and the plagues. And so it's an invitation. The test becomes an invitation to know God better. Okay, so now we get to Exodus 19. We're just going to skip right to the point where we are at the mountain, right? And this is what the story is building up to. It takes us 16 chapters to get from Moses being told, this is the sign, this is how they'll know you're from me, this is the goal, them, there, on the mountain. Aaron and Moses tell Pharaoh, the whole point is to go and worship God on the high place. And so here we are. Here we are. On the first day of the third month, after the Israelites left Egypt, on that very day, they came to the desert of Sinai. After they set out from Rephidim, they entered the desert of Sinai, and Israel camped there in the desert in front of the mountain. Then Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain and said, this is what you are to say to the descendants of Jacob, and what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt, and how I carried you on eagle's wings, and brought you to myself. Now if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words you are to speak to the Israelites. Ooh, hoo, hoo, hoo. So good. You can hear this, right? And the language here is, if you listen to my voice, if you listen to my voice, if you obey me, right? If you listen to my voice and you keep my covenant, if you keep my words, then out of all the nations, you will be a treasured possession. You will be like my crown jewel in my kingly crown. You will be of high importance, and you will be a kingdom of priests, a nation set apart. Oh, so, so beautiful. So you have the people now arriving at Horeb in this desert called Sinai. And again, we should connect the Sinai bush with Sinai. And even though the tree isn't mentioned, it is God calling from the mountain and Moses going up onto the mountain and talking with God. He's on the high place with the tree yet again, speaking to God, and he's offering the people a test. He is offering the people actually a way to interact with them and with him and to be partners with him. Yet again, we should just hear all of this. And when the people come back after, of course, Moses listens to the voice and goes and speaks to them, he says, the people say, "We will do everything the Lord had said." So Moses brought their answer back to the Lord. And so he says, "I'm going to come to you in a dense cloud so that the people will hear me speaking. They will hear my voice with you and will always put their trust in you," speaking to Moses. Then Moses told the Lord what the people had said. Oh, so, so good. And of course, we know from that point on the story forward, they do go to the mountain, or the Lord does come, there's fire, and it's almost as if the mountain is transformed into the burning bush. And here I want to find the spot, and I can't find it right now, because why would I, right on the spot? But I am reminded that when the people see this, they go, "That is terrifying." And it's almost as if they don't really pass the test. Because the whole point is for them then to go up into the mountain, be in this space, be now with God, talking to God. And they're like, "No, this is pretty terrifying. But we still want to listen to God. So Moses, why don't you go and we'll listen to you?" So he becomes the intercessor here. Which doesn't surprise you when you think back to the bitter water story. He is the intercessor. He's already doing what he's always been doing. And so that's what he does. Okay, God agrees. Moses goes up into the mountain, into the fire and the lightning and the cloud. And oh my gosh, and they're waiting there to hear what he's saying. And so the test comes. And do the people pass the test? That's our question. Do the people pass the test? We know Moses passes the test. He listens to the voice so far, and this is really good. But then we have when the people saw that Moses was so long, delayed in coming down from the mountain, they gathered around Aaron and said, "Come, make us gods who will go before us. As for this fellow Moses who brought us out of Egypt, we don't know what has happened to him." And the thing that we're missing here that isn't really in English, but is there in the Hebrew is that this has somehow been attached to shame. The word shame appears. And what's interesting about that is, again, we're having a replay of the Adam and Eve story, of the fall story. So this is found in Exodus 32, right? We started in verse 1. So Aaron, starting in verse 2, answered them, "Take off the gold rings that your wives, your sons, and your daughters are wearing and bring them to me." So that all the people took off their earrings and brought them to Aaron. He took what they had handed him and made it into an idol, cast it into the shape of a calf, fashioning it with tools. Then they said, There are your gods, Israel, who brought you out of Egypt." When Aaron saw this, he built an altar in front of the calf and announced, "Tomorrow there will be a festival to the Lord." So the next day the people rose early and sacrificed going up offerings and presented fellowship offerings, meals. Afterwards they sat down to eat and drink and go up to indulge in revelry. Then Yahweh said to Moses, "Go down, because your people, whom you brought out of Egypt, have become corrupt. They have been quick to turn away from what I commanded them and have made themselves an idol, cast in the shape of a calf. They have bowed down to it and sacrificed to it and have said, 'These are your gods, Israel, who brought you out of Egypt.' I have seen these people," the Lord said to Moses, "and they are a stiff-necked people. Now leave me alone so that my anger may burn against them and that I may destroy them. Then I will make you into a great nation." Whoa. So the language that we hear of that they saw and they took, and They form, right? There's language there that mimics and mirrors the story in Genesis 3 of the fall. They saw it was the light to the eyes, so they took. And they even eat, right? At the very end of that part of the story, they've done burnt offerings, fellowship offerings, and they've sat and now had a meal. And you are just breaking in your heart because the whole point is God is supposed to be being revealed to them. And even though God is there on the mountain, they have chosen not to go up with Moses, which has then led them to say, we don't know God, make us. Again, I think the confusion here is that sometimes we think that then they just made up a God, and that's not what's happening. They are seeking to find and know the God who has rescued them. That's why Aaron says, behold, the gods who have rescued you out of Egypt. This is the one that you should be worshiping and thanking. And that's not necessarily true. God is up there on the mountain with Moses, giving him the Ten Commandments, seeking to reveal his will, his voice to them so they will listen. And they haven't. He told them to wait. Moses will come back. And they didn't. Ugh, we should be so heartbroken. We should also see that Aaron is a person who is in a leadership and priestly role. We should be thinking of Adam here. Adam should have known not to take from that tree. He was told not to take from the tree. He is a priest. He's being made a priest. Moses is getting the instructions for what does a priest look like and how to help Aaron prepare to be the priest for the people. And here he is living out that role, but in all the wrong ways. Right? He's making bad decisions and leading the others in this space that is supposed to be a new Eden, right? The whole mountain becomes like a new Eden space. It should be hearkening us back to that. And then the bad decisions. And finally, this is the story that really connects idolatry, worshiping of false gods near the Eden mountain, sacred trees on top of space, like as a bad thing that will project forward again in the story. Where when the people are making bad decisions, one of the signs of that is the idolatry, is the backwards going up on their own perceived high places to worship false gods rather than the one that rescues them, rather than the one that is seeking to be known by them, they seek elsewhere. Okay, so we didn't leave them in a good spot. But Moses, in Exodus 32... verses 30 through 33, we have some interesting tales being said there, right? So here he says, the next day Moses said to the people, you have committed a great sin. So he's down there now with the people. You have created a great sin, but now I will go up to the Lord. Perhaps I can make atonement for your sins. So Moses went back to the Lord and said, oh, what a great sin these people have committed. They have made themselves gods of gold, but now please forgive their sin. But if not, then blot me out of the book you have written. The Lord replied to Moses, whoever has sinned against me, I will blot out of my book. Oof. So here, there's a couple of things that happen. Right from verse 32, 1 through 10, we get this golden calf. He declares, all right, you know what? I'm done. I'm going to start over with you, Moses. Moses does what he normally does. He intercedes. And he says, God, who are you? Are you God of mercy or are you God of justice? Because right now, your justice and your mercy are at odds. And you want mercy because what does it look like for you to have rescued these people as a sign and a symbol for all the world to know and see you and know you by, if only then to wipe them out? What does that communicate about you and your promises and who you are to the rest of the world? So he's asking God to have mercy over justice because God is right in his judgment that they have done wrong and done wrong by him. They said they were going to listen. They said they wanted a covenant relationship. And immediately they break those terms. I once heard it like, you know, somebody who on the day of the wedding is cheating on their spouse. You know, they've said yes, they said we're in agreement, and before the party and an event is even over, you're already cheating and there's already something wrong. The relationship is already broken. And so, I mean, yes, God is within full rights to go, okay, well, I'm going to start with the one who has been faithful, the one who has been listening to me, and that is Moses, and I can do it. And I can start with one and build from there, and that is how my promises will go. We could see the logic, but no, Moses comes and intercedes for the people. He puts on that Abraham role. But now in verse 30 through 33, we hear him putting on this Noah and Isaac role. I will go up on the mountain. There's actual similar language here between the Genesis story with Isaac and Abraham and Moses. I will go up and be this offering. I will make atonement. Abraham will go and offer Isaac as a going up offering, burnt offering. That's the story in Genesis 22. But now Moses will offer himself if his intercessions are not heard. So he's going to go, he's going to plead again, right? And if it's still not heard, he's going to offer himself. And that's what he does. If you're not going to choose mercy, if you're not going to go forward and forgive them and their sins, then blot me out too. Take me. And so there in the shade of the tree, at the top of the mountain, in the presence of God, intercession is being made in life. A life is being offered in a way that takes that Isaac story and pushes it forward. It's not going to be the son that is offered, it is going to be me. And there is going, like, if there's going to be taking from the tree of life, if life is going to be had, it is going to come at sacrifice, the cost of sacrifice now. That is the reality in which we find ourselves in. Not in the will of God that God wants sacrifice, but that is now the space they find themselves in, the reality of the world. And here we have him going, yes, it'll be me. So you hear the story of Adam and Eve, mountain tree presence, right? High place. You hear Noah as sacrifice and rescue. And Abraham as intercessor, all being pulled here. But now on top of it, you got the Isaac story, in which there the decision is made for life, not death. He chooses the life of the people, not the death of the people. And that he would rather put his life on the line. Moses would rather put his life on the line than have death go out in such a way. And so we can hear that there's almost like Moses saying, I'll be the snake crusher. I will be the one. If it means their sa it, my sacrifice means their salvation, I'll do it. I'll get bitten by the snake and I will be killed if it means life for them. If it means your plan of salvation continues and your promises are kept, Lord. And you could see God go, man, you don't need to do that. You are not the snake crusher. But boy, this is a good thing. Like there's a deeper connection there being made by Moses and by God. And I think that is part of the reason why his face then begins to shine. That is why we see in a very physical way the glory of God shining out of Moses, because he is the one that is taking all of these themes, if you say in a story way, and living them out. He's being the human that God has always meant humanity to be. One who is willing to be selfless and not self-centered, willing to intercede for others, caring for others, thinking of life and who God is, and being in right relationship, not just with God, but with each other, and seeking to have God's will, God's plan of rescue and salvation for all of creation seen. And this is so good. So good. So now we'll end a little bit with this taste. We find that God is going to move forward, but the people cannot go up. They cannot go up into the high space, into the high place with the tree, be in that Eden setting. And so at first you're like, oh no, they're going to be exiled. But we find that God says, no, I'm going to come down to you. So he is going to, because they cannot go up to him, he is going to come down to the people. And the way in which he does this is through the tabernacle. And the tabernacle becomes this new mini Eden that is portable, where God can, it can be God's space among the people. And hopefully that space then continues to spread. So the Ark of Noah in Genesis 6:14 through 15, we find the language, make yourself an ark of tree of gopher. Now in Exodus 25, it's make an ark of tree of acacia wood. And then the atonement cover, which sits on the top, says make an atonement cover of pure gold. You will pitch it with pitch inside and out in the Noah story. Now here in Exodus, and you will overlay it with pure gold inside and out. And then it's almost as if the first two statements are again combined in Exodus 25 for the atonement cover. Make an atonement cover of pure gold. And then finally in Genesis, in the flood story, we hear of measurements of length, of width, of height. And for the ark, you hear of length and width and height. And the same with the atonement cover, of length and width and height, in the same kind of manner that I think we're supposed to catch that the tree of salvation is now the tree of life, the tree of rescue, the tree that offers life, is being combined here with the covenant, and the Ark of the Covenant, sorry. And we should see that the space that is designed for the tabernacle and eventually the temple will be Eden-like as well. In Eden, you have the concentric circles of Eden, garden, tree of life. In the tabernacle, you have the courtyard, the tabernacle or tent, and then the Holy of Holies. In the temple, you have the courtyard, the holy place or the building, and then the inside of that, the Holy of Holies. In Eden, you have the tree of life. In the tabernacle, you have the acacia wood, which is what the ark is made out of. And in the temple period, you have the cedars of Lebanon and cypress wood and olive wood all being used, while the Ark of the Covenant is at the center, yet again representing the tree. So our pattern continues with high places and trees and God's presence and decision, rescue and salvation coming from these trees, being linked with these trees, and the sacrifice and life is given by the intercessor, right? So we are now carrying these things. We mentioned in our Bible study last week in person how it's not that we're going back to Eden, but that we're taking from Eden forward these little things as if we're collecting them along the road. So we now also are told Israel cannot go back into the Eden holy space on the high place. So God will come down to them. And isn't that beautiful? God comes down to us. At the end of Exodus, we're left with, but Moses can't enter the tent. And we find, what does it mean for people and God to live in the same space down here, not on the high place? And what does it mean for Eden to be brought down here so God can be with us? And that's what the book of Leviticus is, a new creation, a story of setting up the sacred space like Eden and the new priesthood and how that goes wrong and yet right and how that tells the story forward. So as always, I want us to think of the three questions of what is your aha moment? What is your uh-oh moment? How do you hear God speaking today? Right? What are some things that you really like that maybe something started clicking for you that got you excited or happy or, you know, felt empowered by? What are some things that really challenged you? What are some things that you really pushed back on and why? And we should always be asking, how is God speaking to us in this? And I think another good question that could go along with that is, what does this tell us about God? What is our study starting to show and reveal us about who God is, right? I appreciate our time together. And next time we'll be looking at false trees and people of trees. So we'll hear the story of David and Bathsheba and Saul as king and how that was chosen, and even the Asherah poles. So again, I hope you join us for our Bible study this week, and I hope to see you in person. This is Zach with Faith Connection. Take care. See you soon.